Pubsters, welcome back to the AIMP Nashville Pubcast. I'm your host, Tim Hunzi. Today we're sitting down with my friend Tim Whipperman, Managing Director of 1RPM Nashville, and we are going to get schooled on indie record labels versus traditional model record labels. I think you're going to find this real interesting, so buckle in and take a listen. Brother Tim, welcome aboard, sir.
Well, thank you.
With your historical background that you have, both at a traditional record label, being a part of the Warner system back in the day, and now moving into the indie side of things and a growing indie thing, as I've mentioned, my listeners are always wanting to learn, and I think a lot of them are like me, and I've got some years experience, and there just seems to now be a proliferation of the indies, and really, most of them, I think, are still labeled indie distributors, but we know that y'all are becoming a little bit more than just distributors as it's rising, where we're finding that more and more artists are building out their own stories, holding on to their own masters. So maybe you can give us just a quick summary as well of what the indie landscape looks like, what it is that they offer that maybe is a little bit different than the more traditional models. Sure. I know each one of y'all is a little bit different, but let's give the highlights.
And there's sort of two stratas of independent distribution / record companies. There's the strata that works mostly with do-it-yourself artists, with DIY artists, a TuneCore, a DistroKid, a CD Baby, that sort of thing. And then there's the next strata that has some services in marketing and that kind of thing. And you were talking about the Symphonics and Believes and that strata. And then there are those who offer really full record company services. And I guess you'd put the Orchard in that and us, and a couple others. But the evolution of the indie distributors has gone from sort of this mom and pop image into companies that can provide all the services a major provides, but without a lot of the overhead infrastructure that majors have to support. The one area where we differentiate, I suppose, from the majors is in radio promotion, and that we don't have, and I don't think any of the others do, have internal full-blown radio promotion teams. We have situations where we've done a deal with a known radio promotion team on a particular artist. We're looking at doing a deal with a major right now where their record promotion team would work with an artist we found. If we found an artist that we both believed in together that was signed to us. Because the majors look at us now and are going, wait a minute, before there wasn't a lot of competition with independent record distributing companies. Now, because we can provide all the services necessary for streaming, anything for streaming, we're equal to and competitive with majors. So we have that capability. So some artists, when they come in, may want to start in the streaming world and may not actually be interested in radio. A lot of artists are not. And then particularly in the country world, it may evolve into where, okay, now we want to get into an analog, terrestrial radio, and we'll do a deal with a major on that.
Everything seems to be moving at such a quick pace in our world, not just in Nashville, but as in the artist world as a whole. And so help me, let's take it from this aspect. Say I'm an independent artist. I'm starting to kind of release stuff, but what is it that you guys need? If, let's say, I've got a minor amount of story on my socials, we'll say under 10,000, followers on my platforms, and right. I've got some minor streaming. Like, what is it you need to see that I can bring to you to help me get to another level? Or what is it you're looking for where it's ideal for you? So for my artists out there or my indie people that are listening, like what do they need to be getting to and what should they expect from you in that aspect?
Okay, there's sort of three or four levels of service that we could provide. We've got a DIY platform called Offstep that if you're a brand new artist and you really are beginning in this process, you can sign on to that. And that is similar to, again, to a CD Baby or a TuneCore, that kind of just pure distribution. If you're an artist that has some traction from the streaming in the streaming world, and we see that, that's really one of the sweet spots for us, because if people are beginning to notice you and you've got stream counts and you're starting to get some success, you then need the machine to really, really blow up your career. And an example of that, we have an artist called Chance Pena. Chance had about, maybe seven, eight months ago, had 600, and now he was fairly big, had 600,000 monthly listeners. So he had some traction. We've taken him to over 14 million in about 6 or 7 months. So we have the machine just to blow up a career like that. We have in-house DSP specialists that pitch to Spotify and, you know, YouTube and Pandora, all that. We have in-house marketing people that work in the ad side of it and the typical marketing. We have in-house sync people. We've got in-house branding people to work on commercials. We've got in-house direct-to-fan, digital direct-to-fan people. And the whole point is to create a platform where an artist with some traction can then really get to a major hit artist level.
Well, let me ask you this question, Tim. At what level are you looking for to get involved with an artist? Because I know all you guys, with STEM and Symphonic and some of the others that are out there, that you guys are getting a little more aggressive and going and finding artists to work with. So what is it that's going to attract you, and what should other artists be paying attention to? Like what metrics are like, you go, okay, here's where we know we can take it from here to here. And so that if I'm just a listener out there where I can go, I'm not even close yet, and I need to keep building my story before I even get to your level.
There isn't a set in stone metric. We have, like I said, four tiers. There's a tier where somebody has under 10,000 monthly listeners, let's say. Okay, that's pretty basic. There's somebody who has between 10 and 50, and that's a sweet spot for us. And then there's people with north of 50 in a particular area. For instance, we have one artist that we're signing now that's a great singer. He's had a lot of success in the Netflix world as an actor. He's got over a million Instagram followers, but he's only got 6,000 YouTube followers, let's say, something like that. And Spotify, 15 to 20,000, you know, monthly listeners. So you would look at it normally as a situation where you go, okay, he's beginning. We might be interested in do a deal with him where we provide DSP support and some marketing. But because of the fact that he's got an audience that's generated from a different medium, which is Netflix, we're hoping that all these 11 million followers, you know, in Instagram will translate into Spotify or to YouTube or to Facebook followers. So again, there's nothing really set in stone. If we see somebody starting to blow up, we're really interested in them because, again, we can take them to a level where then they become a major star.
So you guys using more data and metrics to identify the up and coming artists? Are you doing also some of the traditional models of actually going out to shows, you know, trying to scope through everything?
Yeah, we're doing a combination of both. Historically, I think probably we were more metric driven, but that was more for in the distribution model. Now, we are really pivoting toward becoming a full service worldwide record company, and that requires traditional A&R. And I think we're finding what the majors found, which was they go out and use metrics and they find some artist that just had one track that blew up. It was massive. And then, so they'd sign him. Everybody would run out and try to sign him and give him money or her, you know. And what happened was they had that one track and that was it. And it didn't translate into a career. It didn't translate into an artist that, for instance, could get up on stage and command an audience. You know, on as far as a streaming track, it worked. But then if you put them in front of an audience, it was a disaster. Or they had one streaming track that happened to hit because of the song. But as an artist, they weren't compelling. So people were throwing a lot of money at artists that just didn't translate into a brand. And that's really what we're looking for when we're talking to an artist. I want an artist that in the traditional A&R sense can get up on stage and command an audience that is going to go on socials and really hit the socials every day. I want an artist that's driven and passionate about being an artist. So we're leaning more toward the traditional A&R model now. We go out to shows, we travel to see people. We were down in Texas. Ryan and Shelby and I went down to Texas a month or so ago, and we're talking to a lot of the Texas artists down there in a really traditional A&R search.
That's awesome. So, I figured, you know, you still got to use the good old ears. You know, people always get concerned about AI taking over. And I said, at the end of the day, the human element can never be erased, man. That's still the key.
And again, you're looking for an artist that wants to become a brand. If you look at the big artists today, it's a brand. It's this human being that translates into an entity that people are attracted to. And that's not monofaceted. That means you have to be well-rounded sort of in all your artist capabilities.
Okay, so let's get into some of the nuts and bolts here. Like, I think a lot of people kind of, because it's been around forever, the old traditional model, record deals, you know, the artist gets paid very little, the smallest percentage, anywhere from, you know, 15 and maybe if they're lucky, 20% of revenue. And, you know, you're kind of locked in forever and the labels spend most of the money and the chances of recouping are super, super, super slim. And so along come you guys. What can you identify some of the key benefits of artists who choose indie models currently over some of the major models? What are some of the split differences? What are some of the key benefits for them? Can you jump in on that?
Sure, yeah. I came out of the traditional major world. So you're right. Those deals usually are the sort of deals where the record company signs a new artist, you get a 17 point deal, you're locked in for seven albums and you're firstborn. So ours is a very, and they own the masters in perpetuity. Ours is very different in that we will take a percentage that is commensurate with the amount of services we provide an artist. There are some artists who only want distribution services, who don't want, need marketing services or don't want the more traditional record company functions. And we can do a deal with them that is an 80-20 deal where they get 80, we get 20, and we don't put a lot of money and time in the marketing. Then you can go to a deal with an artist that has some traction and needs marketing and needs DSP support, but doesn't need money to record and doesn't need advances to, you know, to live off in their pocket. Those deals can be 70-30 deals, sometimes 60-40s. But it gives them a record company service level, but without some of the traditional advance structures. Then there are deals we do where we're paying for, and I'll give you an example. We just signed a joint venture with Dan and David Huff. And in our deal with the Huffs, we'll bring artists in, we'll provide the funding for production. Dan and David will do the production. They'll kick in some of their studio time. We'll do full-blown marketing campaigns, full-blown DSP campaigns, full-blown record company deals, record company type services. And those deals are 50-50. Now, some of them for new artists is we'll retain our 50% of the ownership of the masters, and they get 50%. Some of them for the some of the bigger artists, there'll be a finite licensing term. For instance, it might be an 8-year licensing term. It might be a little more, it might be a little less, but then the masters all revert back to the artist. So there's again, depending on how much money I have to and how much staff time, which is really more valuable than the direct advances that I have to allocate to building an artist's career, then we take a fair share of the profit, just depending on all those variables.
So there's a lot of flexibility is what I'm hearing, and depending on the services and the needs and all that, what
there's
they're coming
no rules.
Into.
Yeah, well, I have no deal rules other than it's got to be reasonable for both sides. Most of our deals, the masters will revert. Anything that's, you know, less than a 50-50 deal, the masters will revert to the artist at some point. It just depends on the licensing term. But the fact is, this staff is really experienced. They're highly, you know, experienced professionals, and it costs me a lot of money to hire them and keep them, and, you know, the overheads. By the time you're done, you're probably paying, what, 80 to considering overhead, salaries, travel, all that kind of stuff. You're at 80 to 100 bucks an hour a person that you allocate to toward this other person's career.
Just for those that are listening, when we're talking about percentage, we're talking about percentage ownership of your masters. So we're splitting out the master ownership on, you know, income that's coming in. So just to clarify that. And then revert means the reversion of your ownership of said masters, where, as he mentioned, that like if you hit certain points and you're of certain and you can negotiate it, you can get your masters back fully. As said, if they're heavily invested, then at times they're going to hold on to some of their ownership. But again, everything's negotiable. But I just want to get some of the, I like to make sure I break it down on basic levels for some people that may not understand.
Anything but a 50-50 fully funded deal, we don't get ownership in the master. The artist retains their ownership, and we license that master for X number of years, and then the licensing rights revert back to the artist. But the artist has always owned their masters. It isn't that we own them. Yeah. Now, some of the 50-50 deals, again, when we're putting big money into something where the Huffs are producing, and again, it's a full-blown production cost, then we say, okay, we keep 50% of the ownership of the master and the artist keeps 50%.
Which is in standards of almost my entire career here, this is such a transition from where it used to be. Because if you ever did any deal, somebody was owning you. We used to joke about that. You're basically signing your life away. You're selling your soul. And it's so wild to see how this has transitioned so much, putting more control and ownership back into the artist's hands, which I applaud. It's helping them, benefiting them in a longer term play, which I just applaud greatly. So I think that's cool. But so now I want to ask, and again, on this one, as transparent as you can or willing to be, because, you know, a lot of people are asking, well, what kind of money were you talking about here? Because some people just don't still understand how much money they're making. Do you have a model or a generic model to say, well, if you're making X, you see X amount of dollars? And as I'm asking Tim this question for my listeners, understand each platform, whether it's YouTube, Spotify, Amazon, Pandora, they all pay differently. All the streaming rates are different, which also makes it kind of chaotic. So what I'm asking here is approximate values, so you guys can kind of get your head wrapped around that. I kind of know some numbers, but
they all pay differently. Apple pays more per play. YouTube, we're the fourth or fifth largest YouTube music provider in the world. And so our deal with YouTube gives us a greater amount per play than if an artist just uploaded their video. We'll make 20 to 22% more per play going through our MCN, our multi-channel network, because we have a couple thousand, and obviously we're a big YouTube customer. Spotify is, if you look just at Spotify streams, you're figuring it's about $3,000 per million streams. Now, that's squishy too, because it depends on how many artists are in Spotify. It depends on whether you held your left pinky finger up in the air on Tuesday. There's all these variables in there, but for Spotify, that's a kind of a reasonable place to land. Apple's above that. Some others are below that. So, we have people making $300,000, $400,000 a month from the streaming, but that's a blended rate. And what you're going to make depends on which platform you're stream heavy on, if that makes any sense. If you're really YouTube heavy and you're with us, you're going to make some more money, again, because we have an advantageous relationship with them. If you're Pandora heavy, you won't make as much. Most people are Spotify heavy. Facebook is another one, and that depends on the demographics of your audience. Facebook tends to skew older. YouTube is, across the board. Spotify is in the middle, and TikTok and some of the other ones skew younger. So it depends on what kind of artist you are.
The AIMP Nashville Pubcast is hosted by yours truly, Tim Hunzi, executive producer Brandon Harrington, mixing and editing by Casey Porter, and this has been a Dime Collective production.